Hello everyone, Dr. Alex Vasquez here, coming to you today to discuss a clinical review of vitamin D deficiency in adults. This is part one, and here I'll focus on various pain conditions. So again, this is going to be part one of a series, this time focusing on pain conditions as part of a clinical review of vitamin D deficiency in adults. I think that this is an urgent topic, and I think that it's time for us to update and refresh our perception and paradigms regarding vitamin D deficiency in adults. I think this is of daily importance in clinical practice. This important condition remains tragically underdiagnosed, underprevented, and undertreated in roughly 60 to 90% of the worldwide population. We'll look at some basic sciences, and the question that I have from a basic science level is, where does vitamin D function at the cellular level? With regard to clinical sciences, my main question is, how does vitamin D deficiency contribute to disorders of chronic pain and inflammation? And my fifth focal point here is patient management. Describe the clinical presentation and management of vitamin D deficiency. Most of you know that in 2004, I published a major monograph on vitamin D, and you can download that from the Academia website. As you can see here, this is a free PDF, peer-reviewed article download. As I discuss vitamin D deficiency today, I want to stay within certain parameters that are established by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and these particularly apply if we're going to make what they consider to be any type of claim. This would be structure and function language, claims of general well-being, or claims related to nutritional deficiency disease, and any conversation around that must include prevalence. Anytime nutrition companies make a claim as defined by the US FDA, they have to submit notification within 30 days of first use, and they have to put a disclaimer on the label if they're attributing those benefits to a specific product. In this case, we are talking about vitamin D deficiency in adults. So the main summary is going to be presented on this slide. So we're going to look at this slide right now, and then we'll look at it again toward the end of the presentation. But what I want to focus on is diagnosis and management of vitamin D deficiency in adults. Subjective or historical components include risk factors such as dark skin, obesity, older age, malabsorption, inflammatory bowel disease, of course, because of the inflammation and the malabsorption, sunlight deprivation or overprotection, and chronic use of anticonvulsants or prednisone derivatives, often called steroids or anti-inflammatory steroids. So anticonvulsants and prednisone derivatives upregulate the so-called detoxification pathways in the liver, and that actually promotes the excretion of vitamin D and its downstream metabolites. So those drugs directly contribute to vitamin D deficiency. Obviously, for those of you who are aware of vitamin D, you know that that's somewhat paradoxical or ironic, because a consequence of vitamin D deficiency is more inflammation and also seizures. We'll talk about that in just a moment. So the irony is that the medical treatment of those conditions actually can perpetuate vitamin D deficiency, which perpetuates those conditions. Moving on now to bone pain, muscle pain, fatigue, depression, infections, and also gastrointestinal dysbiosis. A more frequent history of falls, also cognitive impairment, and statin intolerance or statin-induced myalgia. All of those are known to be manifestations of low vitamin D status, or what we should call just vitamin D deficiency. So, for example, in the past, we used to distinguish between vitamin D deficiency and insufficiency. We should call all of it deficiency, and obviously some deficiencies are more grave than others. But rather than split hairs between deficiency and insufficiency, let's just call everybody deficient if they have less than 32 nanograms per milliliter or 80 nanomoles per liter. That's really the physiologic cutoff for vitamin D deficiency. I'll talk about all of that again here today and in some of the videos in the upcoming remainder of the series. And after today's introduction, focusing on pain, I'll also talk about depression and reduced immunity or increased vulnerability to infections. The most consistent objective finding of adult vitamin D deficiency is osteomalacia, which you can assess clinically by looking for pain at periosteal surfaces, and I'll discuss this more later. But what you want to do as a clinician is apply a modest pressure, but a modest but significant pressure at the radius, the tibia, and the sternum. Do not use the mastoid process and do not use the olecranon because those surfaces are famously insensitive. Global and symmetric muscle weakness in severe cases. So once you make the assessment, you can use a diagnosis code as I've listed here. You would really confirm the diagnosis based on laboratory testing, as you can see in the image here and as I'll show you several times throughout today's presentation. And your clinical plan should be to treat and test virtually everyone because we're talking about a condition that affects up to 95% of the global population, and I'll show you the statistics on that in just a moment. Follow-up includes monitoring labs and response to treatment, just like you do with everything else in clinical medicine. So, my basic science question is, where does vitamin D function at the cellular level? The answer to that question is at the nuclear receptor. So vitamin D actually docks onto a vitamin D receptor, a nuclear vitamin D receptor, which heterodimerizes with the retinoid X receptor. As a transcription factor, the vitamin D receptor upregulates or downregulates nearly 3,000 different genes or DNA docking sites. Vitamin D also modulates other transcription factors such as NF-kappa-B, which, as most of you know by now, is absolutely critical for the transcription of hundreds of genes, especially those related to inflammation and immunity. So vitamin D, again, by interacting with the nuclear vitamin D receptor, directly affects almost 3,000 different DNA binding sites. Now, when you consider that vitamin D also modulates NF-kappa-B, nuclear transcription factor kappa-beta, and that transcription factor also modulates another several hundred or several thousand DNA docking sites, then you can truly see that vitamin D affects many, many very important systems within the human body. But that's not all. So the basic science question again that I'm asking is, where does vitamin D function at the cellular level? Most people who know about vitamin D would say the nuclear vitamin D receptor, but a lot of people wouldn't know about the membrane receptor for vitamin D. So this is called the MEM-VDR or the VDR-MEM. This is a non-genomic rapid response receptor which amplifies the effects of vitamin D through second messengers, including inositol triphosphate, protein kinase A, and cyclic AMP. So basically with vitamin D, we see changes in nuclear transcription and we also see rapid response changes at the level of the cell membrane. Vitamin D has daily importance in clinical practice. This important condition of vitamin D deficiency remains tragically underdiagnosed, underprevented, and undertreated in roughly 60 to 90% of the worldwide population. And here I'll show you an excerpt from the monograph that I published in 2004, which again, you can download for free online. So let's look at some of the prevalences that I documented 17 years ago for vitamin D in various populations. 57% of 290 medical inpatients. As I recall, that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Another study found 93% of 150 patients with chronic musculoskeletal pain in the United States, 48% of patients with multiple sclerosis, 50% of patients with fibromyalgia, 42% of healthy adolescents and African-American women, and at least 62% of the morbidly obese. Other studies showed deficiency among 83%, 73%, 58%, more than 40%, and 40 to 70% of Scandinavian medical patients. If we look at a more recent publication, this time from Journal of Steroid Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, 2014, we see that with a reasonable definition of vitamin D deficiency, in the United States, 34 to 37% of people are deficient. In Canada, being farther north, that prevalence goes up to 60%. If we look at Great Britain, the incidence in winter is as high as 87% and in summer at 61%. In Scotland, Norway, Finland, we see prevalences of 52%, 65%, 77%, and 78%. If we look at New Zealand, we look at prevalences of 90% in men and approximately 90% in women as well. Australia, 73%. The most common manifestations of vitamin D deficiency in adults are depression, infection, and today's topic, which is chronic pain. So in 2004, we documented in our review article that vitamin D deficiency was prevalent in most populations, and here again in an independent publication by other authors in 2014, they had the exact same conclusion, that vitamin D deficiency is a common problem worldwide. And very interestingly, we see vitamin D deficiency not only among the general population and among patients, but also among medical doctors. Here's an article published by the International Osteoporosis Foundation in 2015 showing vitamin D deficiency among physicians. 95% of hospital-based physicians have vitamin D deficiency, consistent with depression, immunosuppression, and chronic pain, whereas 89% of free-range physicians outside of the hospital also have vitamin D deficiency. Not surprisingly, latitude is mostly irrelevant for people working long hours indoors. Again, this is a global, international problem among physicians. Let's look at another study that had the same conclusion, vitamin D levels and deficiency with different occupations. This was published in BMC Public Health in 2017. They found here rates of severe vitamin D deficiency among healthcare professionals, medical students 72%, medical residents 65%, practicing physicians 46%, other healthcare employees 44%, and nurses 43%. So again, this is a worldwide, population-wide problem in the general public, among patients, and among healthcare providers, especially those who work long hours in hospitals. So because this is an important problem and it's a prevalent problem, that makes it an urgent problem. So we need to update and refresh our perception and paradigms regarding vitamin D deficiency in adults. For patients in pain, every day is urgent. For patients with depression, every day is important, and for patients with acute infections and immune suppression due to vitamin D deficiency, every day can, at times, be an emergency. But again here, in part one, I'm focusing on chronic pain conditions attributed to vitamin D deficiency, and I'll show you the mechanisms in just a moment. One of the things I noticed when I was doing the first draft of this video is that having studied the pharmacology of pain management, I noticed that vitamin D doesn't even get mentioned in textbooks on medical pain management, and that's because most of those textbooks mostly talk about pharmacologic approaches, and they divide pain into two different categories, nociceptive pain and neuropathic pain. Well, vitamin D isn't either one of those. So my point with this slide from my other presentation is that the entire medical model is based on the pharmacology of pain management, not the pathophysiology of pain itself. So that was very important. Let me see if I can say that again. The entire medical model of pain management is based on the interventions that they use, drugs, surgeries, procedures, and those drugs address two categories of pain, nociceptive pain and neuropathic pain. The pain that we see with vitamin D deficiency is not nociceptive and it's not neuropathic, and I think that because the paradigm is inaccurate, I think that's why a lot of medical physicians have a hard time integrating the idea that vitamin D deficiency could cause pain. Because the way that most medical physicians are taught to manage pain is to look at it from a nociceptive perspective or a neuropathic perspective. And vitamin D deficiency isn't nociceptive and it's not neuropathic. So let's just include that in our mix of considerations as we now go on to get closer to talking about those mechanisms. So how does vitamin D deficiency contribute to disorders of chronic pain and inflammation? Number one, and I'll detail this more in just a moment, osteomalacia and subperiosteal edema. That leads to chronic bone pain. That can be in the axial skeleton or in the peripheral skeleton, otherwise known as the limbs. So back pain or limb pain can be due to vitamin D deficiency, specifically due to subperiosteal edema, and that is a component of what we call osteomalacia. Systemic inflammation from a genomic standpoint. Systemic inflammation, increased intestinal permeability and gastrointestinal dysbiosis, immune dysregulation and autoimmune consequences, accelerated osteoarthritis, neuroinflammation, and here's a new term that I just made up while I was putting this together, myohyperinnervation. So this is a proliferation of nociceptive neurons in muscle as a consequence of vitamin D deficiency. This has been shown to occur in animals that are made vitamin D deficient within 2 to 4 weeks of induced vitamin D deficiency. So again, I call that myohyperinnervation. It's a proliferation or a sprouting of these nociceptive neurons within skeletal muscle, not within the skin, within the skeletal muscle. So my other term for that is nociceptive sprouting. Vitamin D deficiency also promotes magnesium deficiency. And when you look at items 2 through 8, all of those can exacerbate all different types of pain. Now, let's look again at my article from 2004. Again, you can download that for free online, and let's look at a few excerpts from that article. So what I mentioned previously is accelerated osteoarthritis. Let's look at two sentences from that article, again from 2004. Data showed osteoarthritis of the knee progressed more rapidly in patients who were vitamin D deficient. Another study found that osteoarthritis of the hip progressed more rapidly in those with more severe vitamin D deficiency. Again, musculoskeletal pain, we want to think osteomalacia, we want to think subperiosteal edema. 93% of 150 patients with persistent nonspecific musculoskeletal pain were overtly deficient in vitamin D. This includes spine pain and limb pain. Another study in Saudi Arabia found vitamin D deficiency in 83% of almost 300 patients with chronic low back pain. And after supplementation with vitamin D, the back pain was alleviated in nearly 100% of those patients after 3 months of treatment. Earlier, I mentioned seizures and epilepsy. Seizures can be the presenting manifestation of vitamin D deficiency. Also, migraine headaches are made worse within a clinical context of vitamin D deficiency. So for example, am I stating that vitamin D cures migraine headaches? No, I'm saying that vitamin D deficiency makes migraine headaches worse through the mechanisms that I've already defined. And when we're working with a patient who has migraine headaches, we should certainly test them for and treat them for vitamin D deficiency. Now let's look at some details from a journal that I'm sure most of you will respect called Mayo Clinic Proceedings. This was published in 2003. Vitamin D deficiency, what a pain it is. And here, Dr. Michael Hollick does a great expert-level job of describing how vitamin D deficiency causes chronic skeletal pain. And what it comes down to is basically this. With vitamin D deficiency, calcium absorption is reduced, so we see a lowering, let's say, of body calcium levels. To compensate for the lower calcium levels, the parathyroid gland secretes parathyroid hormone, and that actually promotes excretion of phosphate in the urine. So basically what we end up with following vitamin D deficiency is a deficiency, relative deficiency or a cellular deficiency of calcium and phosphate. Without calcium phosphate, bones cannot mineralize, and when they can't mineralize, those osteoblasts continue to lay down collagen, which is hydrophilic and swells and puts pressure on the sensory innervated periosteum. That's exactly what causes dull, unrelenting pain in these patients who have moderate or severe vitamin D deficiency. As you would expect, sometimes these patients are diagnosed with fibromyalgia or depression or malingering because the doctor can't figure it out, and it doesn't quite fit into the medical model of pain, which is either neuropathic or nociceptive. However, I think a good clinician could make this distinction because obviously the pain of fibromyalgia coincides with certain tender points, and also it is specifically in the muscle, whereas the pain of vitamin D deficiency, osteomalacia with subperiosteal edema, is in the bones themselves. So you put a moderate pressure on the tibia, on the radius, and on the sternum, and that's how you can assess this clinically. Those are not tender points that we assess with fibromyalgia because they're on the bone itself and not in the muscles. And in fibromyalgia, what's more affected than the bone is the muscle. Also from Mayo Clinic Proceedings 2003, this was a very famous study that should have been read by every clinician on the planet, showing a very high prevalence of severe hypovitaminosis D in patients with persistent, nonspecific musculoskeletal pain. And you can see the final conclusion of this article. Because osteomalacia is a known cause of persistent, nonspecific musculoskeletal pain, screening all outpatients, and I would argue inpatients, with such pain for hypovitaminosis D, vitamin D deficiency, should be standard practice in clinical care, and I certainly agree with that. So in addition to this mechanism of subperiosteal edema that we see with osteomalacia, we also see neurologic changes that can contribute to the amplification and persistence of chronic pain. You can see this article from Pain Medicine 2014, Vitamin D and Central Hypersensitivity in Patients with Chronic Pain. Vitamin D deficiency was present in 71% of chronic pain patients. Another 21% had insufficient vitamin D. We should put all those patients together and call them vitamin D deficient, and that would make this 92% of their patient population. 92% of their chronic pain patients were vitamin D deficient. And this is a cause and effect, dose-dependent relationship. The more severe the vitamin D deficiency, the more severe the chronic pain. And their conclusion reads, these findings suggest a role for low vitamin D levels for heightened central sensitivity, particularly augmented pain processing upon mechanical stimulation. Just like I had said before, applying pressure to the bony surfaces of the sternum, the radius, and the tibia. Now let's look at a case series that was published in the Journal of the American Board of Family Medicine in 2009. Improvement of chronic back pain or failed back surgery with vitamin D repletion, a case series. This article reviews six selected cases of improvement or resolution of chronic back pain or failed back surgery after vitamin D repletion. He concludes, chronic low back pain and failed back surgery may improve with repletion of vitamin D from a state of deficiency or insufficiency to sufficiency. Vitamin D insufficiency is common. Repletion of vitamin D to normal levels in patients who have chronic low back pain or have had failed back surgery may improve quality of life or, in some cases, result in complete resolution of symptoms. Again, Journal of the American Board of Family Medicine, 2009. So again, we see bone pain and central sensitivity as a consequence of vitamin D deficiency in our adult patients. So we are reaching the end of this presentation, so let's do a quick review. How does vitamin D deficiency contribute to disorders of chronic pain and inflammation? Osteomalacia is characterized by subperiosteal edema, which puts pressure on the very sensitive periosteum, and that's what causes dull skeletal pain, either in the spine or in the peripheral skeleton. So let's just call that bone pain. Systemic inflammation at a genomic level through activation of NF-kappa-B, for example. Systemic inflammation, increased intestinal permeability and gastrointestinal dysbiosis. Immune dysregulation and autoimmune consequences. Accelerated osteoarthritis. Neuroinflammation. Myohyperinnervation, or nociceptive sprouting of nociceptors within muscle tissue. Number 8, magnesium deficiency, and all of those work together to exacerbate all types of pain. So what then is our means for diagnosing and managing vitamin D deficiency? You're going to use the same protocol that you use for every condition, and that is, of course, you start with subjective or history, and you look for risk factors such as dark skin, obesity, older age, nutrient malabsorption, including inflammatory bowel disease, sunlight deprivation, including medical physicians, overprotection, which includes everybody who either lives indoors, wears clothes, or puts on sunscreen, chronic use of some drugs, especially anticonvulsants and prednisone derivatives. More specifically, we see bone pain, muscle pain, fatigue, depression, infections and dysbiosis, more frequent falls, cognitive impairment, and statin intolerance or statin myalgia. Objective findings include pain at periosteal surfaces. We use the radius, the tibia, and the sternum. We do not use the mastoid process nor the olecranon. We look for global symmetric muscle weakness in severe cases. And in one of the most interesting cases I read, which I believe was published in The Lancet, was titled The Woman Who Left Her Wheelchair. And this was a woman who had malabsorption of vitamin D. She developed severe vitamin D deficiency. She was eventually confined to a wheelchair. She was eventually confined to a wheelchair because of her muscle weakness, and when she was repleted with vitamin D, she was able to leave her wheelchair. All of you would agree as clinicians that that's what we would all consider to be a clinical miracle. Getting a patient out of his or her wheelchair is something that you would brag about for the rest of your life. And I guarantee you, you have cases in your office right now that you could brag about for the rest of your life if you address their underlying problems. We assess this with laboratory tests. We provide a diagnostic code, as you can see here, from the updated ICD-10. We base that diagnosis on lab tests, as I've reviewed for you here. You can download that in the articles, and I'll show you an updated version of that in just a moment. Our plan is to treat and test virtually everyone because we're talking about a condition that affects up to 95% of the population. How do we follow this up? We follow up with labs and response to treatment, just like everything else. And here's another page, again, summarizing the diagnosis and treatment of vitamin D deficiency. I want to show you an updated version of the laboratory interpretation, which I just made last year in 2020. Again, you can download this for free online. So what I'm doing in this presentation, as you can tell, is I'm emphasizing some of the clinical subjective presentations and things that you can assess clinically with your own hands. But of course, we want to make the conclusive diagnosis and we want to monitor these patients with laboratory testing. Again, bone pain, muscle pain, fatigue, depression, frequent infections, falls, cognitive impairment, and statin myalgia. Pain at periosteal surfaces, such as the radius, tibia, and sternum. Also, global muscle weakness. We make a conclusive diagnosis with lab tests, and then we code appropriately. Our plan is to test and treat about 95% of our patients who are deficient, and our follow-up is labs and response to treatment, just like everything else that we do in clinical practice. So again, thank you very much for participating as an attendee in part one, Focus on Pain Conditions, in my new series on clinical review of vitamin D deficiency in adults. Again, this has been Dr. Alex Vasquez.